Support for this show comes from Art Beats and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Colt Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art Beats and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual past while also revealing their distinct roles within Art Beats and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art Beats and Lyrics now on Hulu. Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
The SB Nation NFL show is on the clock, and we welcome you to our second episode of NFL Draft Specific Coverage. I'm your host, Michael Kist, and today we have a banger for you. We will be joined by the great Danny Kelly of The Ringer. I'm going to throw the link in the description of the show because I'll tell you, few draft guides are built like Danny's, and I learn a ton from it every year. The layout is gorgeous. It's super user-friendly, so I highly recommend it. Of course, if you're new to the show here, smash the subscribe button if you're enjoying the content. Hit 5 stars in Apple Podcasts. Leave a written review. We've got you covered all offseason, not only with the draft, but with free agency and all the other top headlines and storylines in the NFL. But regardless, thank you for joining us today. We're going to get right into it. This is my chat with Danny Kelly. We're talking top 10 non-QB prospects. So guys from other positions that could go in that range at the top of the draft, what we love about them, what we're not so sure about. We're going to deal with some different stacks with some different positions. So there's going to be a lot of different positions and players discussed here. So let's go to that talk right now. Danny, welcome into the SB Nation NFL show. How you doing, brother?
I am doing excellent. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's good to see your face again. Last time we saw each other, Mobile, Alabama for the Senior Bowl a couple years back. Wasn't able to make the trek this year. Hopefully I get to see you next year, man. Such a fun event. And the Combine this year. Do you usually go to the Combine?
Yeah. The Combine, it should be going on right now, right? So that's kind of depressing to think about. But yeah, man, I cannot wait to go back to Mobile next year. Hopefully the world is back to normal. I'm assuming it'll be back to normal by then. And we can, you know, go to, what is it? What's the bar that everybody goes to call again? I can't even remember. Vons or something? Veets.
Yeah. Veets is definitely the bar to go to there, and hopefully we can share some drinks next year. And I think this, you know, talking about the draft, because of COVID and everything like that, everything is so different. And just like an off-the-cuff question here, like, is this like the hardest draft to evaluate? Because I feel like we have less information about this class than any other class in decades, really, because of everything that's going on.
I think it is. It's so hard to, in a normal class, I mean, there's always going to be a ton of variability and like a wide range of outcomes for any of these players. But when you have like the at least baseline stuff where how big, like how tall, how much they weigh, right, you know, how fast they can run, generally speaking, that kind of stuff, it gives you sort of this foundation to build upon. It's not something that you should take as gospel or the most important thing necessarily, but it just helps to give context. And I think not having that context this year it just makes everything way more difficult. I think there's going to be a much broader range of like where these guys are going to go. There's going to be more surprises. There's going to be more, you know, quote, surprising falls from players, I would assume. And there probably would be more two or three guys in the first round that everyone's like, what? You know what I mean? Like, I was not expecting that. So I think that's kind of like how this changes this year. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, and there's a lack of box checking, right? Like, I want to know the arm length of a guy. I want to know if I'm concerned about a edge rusher's ability to corner. I want to know the three cone. Like, there are certain things I want to know about prospects and not be concerned about. And you don't have that this year. And even if you do, like, their pro days or whatever, like, do you trust those numbers? Right. How much do you trust those numbers? How much do different schools skew those numbers? But we'll get into all that. And Danny, as I mentioned at the top of the show in the intro, the focus for today is getting an idea of these non-quarterback players that could find themselves selected very highly in the draft, or guys that you may love in that area despite the consensus. But first, how does the Seahawks trading Russell Wilson change the quarterback landscape in the draft?
Damn it, man. Yeah, that'll be interesting. I think I texted somebody the other day. I was like, Well, at this point, I'm so kind of sick of hearing everything about the Seahawks. Every offseason is just like a drama fest with this team. I've called it a circus for years now. Yeah. And at this point, I've just resigned myself to whatever happens is going to be interesting. And I was telling one of my buddies to get ready for like the Tavares Jackson era part two. Whoever the guy is going to be at quarterback, Pete Carroll just doesn't give a shit. Just put somebody in there, you know, and see how that goes. But yeah, so To be honest, though, I don't think he's going to get traded. I think this is a leverage play. At least that's what it seems like to me. Maybe next year or the year after, things will come to a head and he'll, you know, leave or whatever. But for now, I'm going into 2021 with the assumption that he'll be the starter still.
Yeah, I think it's a very outside shot that he is, in fact, traded. But it's fascinating, too. You mentioned the drama. I cover the Eagles. We've had plenty of that this offseason. I know with Seahawks Twitter, I see it all the time. So it's fascinating to see the reaction. And honestly, like the memes, like Seahawks Twitter is great for the memes coming out of this. And the discourse they have is just on a different like level through a different lens, right?
Yeah. It's like the Rovell tweet. This is terrible for our country, but the content's tremendous kind of deal. It's terrible for our team, but just tremendous content. Yeah. So I'll take it.
So let's get into the draft talk. Like I said, top 10 non-QBs. And look, as an Eagles fan, as I mentioned, I have no room to judge anybody for the QB drama. So we'll move past that. I'll do it anyway. It's not my fault. But speaking of the Eagles, there are two guys right away that I know that you like and that are probably going very high. And I also see them mock to the Eagles and inside the top 10 all the time. Mm-hmm. Let's start with Kyle Pitts out of Florida. And Danny, I'll pitch a softball out on this one to you. But why should a tight end like Pitts be considered in that top 5, top 10 area?
Because he's a receiver.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, he is going to, I think he, it depends on what the teams think. I've seen several reports or whatever you want to call them, tweets, rumors, that teams have him ranked highly on their boards as a receiver. There's several teams out there that see him as a receiver. Now, does that mean he's going to be a receiver at the NFL level? I don't know. I think he'll probably play tight end. It's kind of like the Chase Claypool argument last year, but like on steroids, you know what I mean? Like people are like, oh, he's going to just transfer. He's going to be a tight end. And then he ended up just being a receiver like he was. So I'm guessing Pitts will end up being a tight end in the NFL. But what the discussion really tells you is that this guy has special movement skills. He's special with the ball in the air. Very good route runner. And this is hyperbole, but he almost kind of the way he moves sort of reminds you a little bit of like Calvin Johnson. Calvin Johnson was such a unicorn, so I'm not going to say that. But
what about Pitts, like Darren Waller? Would you put it on that level?
Yeah, that's actually who I have comp to him. And I think Waller, I think people are anchoring to the idea that Waller is not as good. Like he it took him a while to get going in the NFL. He was a later round pick. There's all these things kind of working against Waller's perception or reputation as an elite player. I think Waller is an elite player in the NFL. And I mean, last year he led all tight ends in contested catches. I think that's Pitt's game too. It is very good at the catch point. You know, he's a dominant sort of a catch point bully type guy, very good in the red zone. I was watching Kyle Trask the other day and Pitt's I just was like having so much fun watching Pitt. It was like, I don't really care so much about Trask. I was just like, Pitts is awesome, man.
Yeah.
It was like a reconfirmation because I watched Pitts early in the process and did like my rank. And then kind of going back, I'm like, okay, I got to move this guy up. He's like so freaking good. Yeah. So, he to me is I guess you could call him kind of a hybrid between like a receiver and a tight end. But I do think he has the talent that would make him worth being taken in the top 10. It's a different discussion than previous, like for instance, Hockenson. I think a lot of people were saying, oh, you can take Hockenson in the top 10 because he can contribute so much in the run game too. This is a totally different discussion. You're getting this guy to be a touchdown scorer, a third down converter, and a huge part of your offense. So like there are arguments for taking in the top 10, even though I'm totally aware of all the sort of, you know, I would say maybe bad picks in when tight ends have gone in the top 10 before.
Yeah. You mentioned Waller and his track. I mean, he was a wide receiver at Georgia Tech. You're not exactly getting a whole lot of development there as far as that goes. You right. got like one route right. you're working the flex bone offense and all that stuff. So if totally. if you tell me if like and Waller too, like he plays a lot in line, and I think Pitts can play in line. I think he can do tight end things. I know with the Eagles, like when Zach Ertz wasn't the best blocker, they just have him on simple stuff. It's, you know, inside zone with the split flow action and all that stuff. Just don't ask him to do too much. And I think you can live with him there. But then what he does as a receiver, I think can be really special. I think he could be a big mismatch piece. And that's really the attractive part about his game. It's going to sound like I'm only asking about Eagles targets here, but they're picking at six, so there's a reason for that based in the framework of this show. There's a receiver out there that could help a lot of teams in that area. He seems like the clear wide receiver one, and he's LSU wide receiver Ja'Marr Chase. Danny, this class of wideouts has the potential to be just as special as last year's. Why is Chase just seemingly clearly at the front of that charge?
Yeah, for me, it's sort of his overall skill set and the fact that I don't have very many concerns. I think the one concern people are maybe having with him, which doesn't bother me so much, is the lack of like elite speed or the ability to separate, I guess. But like, to me, do you have those concerns about DeAndre Hopkins? Do you have those concerns about Devontae Adams?
CeeDee Lamb.
Yeah, exactly. The same deal. It to me, it's like he's so skilled at separating late in his routes, getting open at, like, you know, the subtle stuff that you see from the best receivers in the NFL, where you're never really open. There's like a cliche, you're never really open in the NFL. Right. That's not true necessarily, but I do think like he has the ability to separate late. He has incredible acceleration. He might not be fast necessarily, like a 4.4 guy, but he accelerates really fast. He's sudden. And when I found out, like, I watched him before I kind of dug into his measurables. When I found out he was 6 foot, I was like, what?
Yeah,
he doesn't. That doesn't make any sense to me. He plays big in my mind. And so there's, I guess, the overall top end speed and the overall size would be the two concerns for me, but I'm not really concerned about either of those. I think he plays so physical. He's like the alpha type guy, a quote, wide receiver one, a go-to guy. And I think he's going to be, you know, an early success in the NFL. The other thing to keep in mind for context is, like, this dude, you know, obviously the LSU offense was awesome and maybe elevated some stats for some of the guys on that team. But, I mean, you look at what Justin Jefferson did this year. This guy had – Ja'Marr Chase had – he led the country in touchdowns and yards on the same team as Justin Jefferson. Like, this guy was incredibly, incredibly good, too. Arguably better than Jefferson was in 2019. And so I think he's got really good upside, you know, and his skill set, I think, works in the NFL. You know what I mean? He's big, physical, not going to back down, good at the catch point. And honestly, he's good deep. Like, people are saying he's not like an elite, take the top off of a defense type guy. And I think that's probably fair. But at the same time, he can get deep. I want to say per PFF, he had more 20 plus yard receptions than anyone in the country last year or in 2019. So it's not like he's worthless down the field either. So yeah, I like him. I comped him to Devontae Adams just because of his sort of suddenness in the short area and his ability to win at the catch point. I wouldn't say he's necessarily at that level of route running quite yet, but I think he has that ability. So I love Chase. I think he's pretty much the clear wide receiver one in this class.
With LSU holding his pro day, I believe it's March 31st, if I'm not mistaken, is what they just announced. Let's just say he was running at the combine. At what point with Chase, because you're not necessarily concerned about like the deep ball and everything like that. Like CeeDee Lamb, I mentioned him because there was kind of the same debate around him. Like, nobody knows what he does exactly special, but he just does it and it's special. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
CeeDee Lamb ran like a 4.51. Are you expecting the same from Chase? And at what point do you go, like if you get to the 4.6 area, you're like, I might have to, you know, really bump him down.
That's exactly what came to my mind. If he runs like a 4.6 at his pro day,
yeah,
then I'm like, okay, maybe I'm like
really missing something, right?
Yeah, something like maybe something's going on there. I wouldn't say I'd probably drop him down a lot, but in the history, the 4.5s in the history of the NFL, 4.5 guys are superstars all the time.
Yep,
4.6 guys, it's rarer. So you have to say, is this guy an outlier? Mm-hmm. You know, like Jarvis Landry ran in the 4.6s, and he just, you know, he wins in different ways, but he's, you know, that's something that you have to kind of take into account. So I'm guessing he'll run in the 4.5s, and everyone will probably just be like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. That's like pretty much what we were expecting. So we'll see.
Let's keep it with wide receivers, because this is a lot of people's wide receiver too, and he's a household name given that he's won the Heisman. Alabama wideout Devonta Smith. I think we all get that he's a playmaker and he's exciting, but there's a concern with his size. Can you elaborate on the pros and cons with his game there?
Yeah, so I mean, that's, I think the, it's kind of what I just said. It's like, if you're expecting Smith to have him high, this high, and I do in my rankings, I'm expecting him to be an outlier in the NFL, which is always kind of a, like, it's always, you're always betting a little bit that these guys are going to, you know, succeed in the NFL. Like, a lot of first round picks fail, all that stuff. There's already some risk there.
Yeah.
And then when you add in the fact that he's listed, I got him at 172, maybe he might even be skinnier than that, like 165, right. 160. When you say, like, when you look at that, that is, it's rare for guys that size, that rail thin sort of structure, the frame, to succeed or at least put up big numbers in the NFL. It's just a rare thing. So you have to say, does this guy have the skill set to be an outlier and go against the grain in terms of what we've seen historically? And I do think he does, like, for whatever reason. And you said it, he's just like a playmaker. The dude just makes plays. I think his length shows up. He plays bigger than you'd think based on his size, because he has this incredible catch radius and he's so smooth and his body control is so incredible, where he can go up, twist around, you know, reach up with these go-go gadget arms and grab the ball out of the air when you think he's like, there's no way that's going to get to this guy. He still manages to get it. His speed, I think, is good enough. He always looks fast to me when he's going downfield on deep shots. You know, people are talking about how he's probably going to run in the 4.5s or whatever, and that might be disappointing at his weight. But to me, it's like, I don't know, he had plenty of deep shots in college. I saw him catch a lot of, you know, vertical routes. So that to me doesn't really worry me a lot. And then I think the other thing is just his route running, his overall football IQ seems to show up. He's just always open. And he's always, you know, he just has like this sense for when to come back to the football, come back to his quarterback, get himself open. Set up defenders with little like subtle moves, things like that. Like, he's just a player. And so and then on top of all that, I don't know him personally, obviously, but you hear everybody that I've talked to is like, this guy loves football, is an incredibly hard worker, all the things like you want from a prospect. He has all those like intangible like mentality things too. And I interviewed him and he's just business, man. Like, you know, he's not, I gave him a little joke about how he like won, you know, like all the awards this year. And I was like, do you feel bad for winning all the awards? Like, do you feel like you're a little selfish? And he's just like, he didn't like think that was like funny at all. He's just like, no, I mean, like, you know, my teammates were great. It's like, okay. He's just like, he's so business already. And so I think that the maturity will probably help, you know, going into the next level. He's a rare elite receiver that's absolutely not a diva whatsoever.
Yeah, I agree. We had him on the SB Nation NFL show, and he was exactly like you're explaining it. Like, he's not like this typical diva type of wide receiver. He's straight to business and whatnot. Very, very humble. When we're talking about wide receivers here, are there any other wide receivers that you think could sneak into that top 10 non-QB conversation that we should be keeping an eye on?
I think based on what I think the winds are blowing this way, that Jalen Waddle has a chance to do, and I'm not comparing him to Ruggs, but I'm just saying like Ruggs went higher than everyone expected last year. And I think the reason that Waddle could go maybe even be the first, well, he's probably not going to be the first receiver off the board, but maybe the second receiver off the board, is his speed, I think, is special. And the NFL loves speed. I think it's an important thing to have in your offense. Everybody's trying to recreate what the Chiefs do, right? Like how those speed guys can change the geometry of how you play defense. And Waddle is good too. He's not just fast. Like, he's a good receiver. He can go up high and get it. He has almost like running back skill in the way he runs after the catch. He lets blocks set up in front of him. He has incredible burst. So he gets a lot of yards after the catch too. So I think he's got a very interesting skill set. There are some similarities that make me like a little bit worried about him with compared to like Ruggs, but he's a little bit built. He's built different. He's a little more lower to the ground and a little more, I'd say, explosive in terms of his yards after catch ability. So he's definitely a different type of player, but that speed is apparent too.
So those are three big wide receivers and maybe a fourth, whatever you think Kyle Pitts is, talking about going in around the top 10 non-quarterback area. When we come back here on the SB Nation NFL show, we're going to get into the trenches. We'll talk about some defensive guys that could go high. That's coming up next, right after this.
Support for this show comes from Art, Beats, and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Colt Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art, Beats, and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual past while also revealing their distinct roles within Art, Beats, and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari, W., and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu.
Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
We are back here on the SB Nation NFL show. Michael Kist here with Danny Kelly of The Ringer. Remember, check out his draft guide. It's super, super fun. I love the layout and everything like that. Danny, so we're talking about possible top 10 non-QBs. Let's get into the trenches here, and I'll set it up to you this way. We're talking about two players at the top of this offensive draft, offensive tackle class. There's, and help me with the pronunciation here, the guy from Oregon. I went to look it up today. I didn't have my headphones on me. Is it, I'm going to try it. Penei Sewell.
That works. I actually don't know. I was always just thinking it was Penei Sewell, but is it Sewell?
I'm asking you. The way you said it sounds better. Let's go with that one since that's the one in your head. There's also, and this is much easier to pronounce, Rashawn Slater of Northwestern. Yep. What's the fine line that separates them, if there is one there?
So I think they're a little bit different styles. Like Sewell is, I would say, a little bit more like a beefy, burly, power type player. You know, like if we're comparing the two, and then Slater is a little more athletic, not finesse, because that's not the right word. But if he's just like a technical type blocker, I'd say. And when I watched Slater, I was surprised how much I liked him, I guess. Like, I thought, you know, Sewell has this reputation as this generational prospect, and he's absolutely good. Like, what he's done, he's so consistent. You know, got the body size, the feet, basically everything that goes together, and that's why he was able to be so, like, dominant as, like, an 18-year-old kid.
Yeah.
And why everybody's so excited about him. But at the same time, when I watched Slater, I was like, man, this guy is incredibly good. He's just so smooth and athletic, the way he moves. It's like easy movement skills. And I can see why, you know, I think there's been a few analysts that have Slater over Sewell.
Yeah.
And so I can actually see why. I don't think that's like a hot take to me in my mind. I think, you know, obviously Sewell has the reputation and has for a couple of years now been like the chosen one, sort of like the Trevor Lawrence thing, where he's like, this guy's been a top five pick for a couple of years now. And so it's hard to overcome. It's hard to like put a guy over that, but I can see why people have Slater higher, just because I don't personally. I have him on. I have Slater just one spot. I basically grouped them together, more or less saying like both of these guys are studs. But I can see why you'd go Slater, just because his foot quickness, his athleticism, his body control, all that stuff is very, very good. You can see it, and he's very consistent too.
Yeah, there's a thing in the draft community where it's like everyone gets crowned after like their freshman or sophomore year, and like that's the guy, and then all of a sudden someone comes out of nowhere and was like, maybe he's not the guy, and everyone was like, whoa, what do you mean? And like everyone goes back, and then they start to change their mind, and the takes come out and everything like that. You got to figure out what's genuine.
It's the stock market, man. Right. It's like the stock market.
Exactly. It's ADP for draft picks. Yeah. let's flip sides to the defensive side. There's another duo that stacks really tightly, and I know this is a fluid board and things change and likely will change. You'll have updates to your board, but there's a duo that I think is going to stay pretty high and pretty tight throughout this process at the linebacker position, and they'll both probably stiff around the top 10 non-QB area. That's linebackers. Who are the two top linebackers there for you?
Yeah, so I got Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah from Notre Dame and then Micah Parsons from Penn State. I think both of those guys, so they're kind of, they're different styles, right? Owusu-Koramoah, I'll just call him JOK.
There you go.
I actually was wondering this because I know his nickname or whatever is JOK. Do people pronounce it Jock or JOK? Like, is it CEH or K?
I have,
you know what I mean? I'm assuming it's KOH. Yeah. I'm just, or JOK. Sorry. Yeah. Jock. Anyways, so JOK. He is a little bit of a hybrid type player. He plays sort of over the slot, overhang, kind of all over the formation. He is, to me, the most exciting, electric player to watch in this draft. Like, his tape is so fun because he just flies around. He's an elite athlete. I know he was on the freaks list this last year, just like lifting-wise, explosion-wise, jumping, everything. He is just a ball of explosiveness. And so he's really fun to watch. I think if you get him on the right, it's sort of you know, it's the hybrid thing is kind of hard to predict in the NFL because, like, a lot of times if these guys go the wrong team or a team that just wants to use these guys in a traditional manner, then all the hype is like, why did people hype this guy up? You know what I mean? And it's like Simmons last year, who, you know, I think he showed out well in the second half of the year, but I don't know. It's one of those things where I could end up feeling like I probably missed on this guy. But at the same time, watching Koramoah, he is just all over the field. The things he does, the speed he plays with, the closing speed that he has, the tackling, and he's good in coverage. So I think he has all the skill set to really excel. I actually comped him to Jamal Adams, who's obviously a safety. But the way that Adams is like a safety or something like that, and so that's kind of the same vein I see this guy, the Koramoah. I think he could be the type of guy who, in a defense that wants to use him creatively, maybe this doesn't happen as a rookie, but as, you know, second year, third year, as he starts the game slows down and all that stuff, can be that type of playmaker all over the defense. So I think he's really, really fun. Now, he's honestly maybe my favorite player, just like bottom line in this class, and so we'll see how that goes. But there is some risk there with sort of his fit in the NFL and his ability to take on blocks, all that stuff. But at the end of the day, he's just really fun to watch. And then Parsons is similar vein, just like freakishly good athlete, ascending player who has the skill set to be, you know, a multiple use type guy. In fact, he's pretty good as a little bit of like an edge rusher. There's some similarities there, as both of these guys have that skill set to be used kind of all over the formation. So I think most people have Parsons as their linebacker one, and I can understand that, but I just really liked Koramoah, and I just think he's so exciting to watch.
Yeah, and it's hard to project those guys, right? Like, Davion Taylor was a guy that was selected by the Eagles, and he, like, pretty much only played overhang, and when he got into the box, you were like, this guy has no idea what he's looking at when it comes to run fits, and you know what I mean? Like, different keys, so that's the tough part, is projecting him to that area. How well 100%. Will they acclimate to that? Let's get to the top quarterbacks here, because we run into yet another stack. We've got Alabama cornerback Patrick Surtain II, and then Virginia Tech quarterback Caleb Farley. Who do you think has the edge there, and why?
These are tough. I think overall, I don't know how you feel about this, but cornerbacks to me are very difficult to project and to scout just in general, because, you know, a lot of the times these guys are going to a different scheme in the NFL where they're asked to do different things. And maybe their skill set doesn't perfectly fit that. Obviously, the speed and the physicality at the NFL is a little bit different. But I think, to me, Surtain another, is that, how do you pronounce that? Sertain or Sertain?
Patrick Sertain, I believe it is.
Sertain.
Yeah, his father Got played, it. And I think it's Sertain in my head.
Yeah. Okay. So anyways, Sertain, he's just got like the whole skill set, length, good speed, long arms, you know, reactive athleticism, all that stuff, size. He's 6'2", 205, I think he's listed at. So he's got like the ability to play press, all that stuff. But at the same time, man, Caleb Farley is just so quick. I think Farley is quicker, more athletic, a little more, comfortable in, you know, flipping his hips, moving around, all that stuff. So I think both of these guys have really, really good traits. I'll put it that way. And it's just, to me, it's so hard to predict what corners are going to do in the NFL. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's just, I think scouting wise, quarterbacks and corners are difficult.
Yeah.
To predict. But I do think for both of these guys, I looked at their athleticism, you know, their ability, like their fluid athleticism, their ability to change directions, their length, I think their length shows up on tape, both of these guys. And so like, to me, that's kind of like what put them over the edge. And I have them kind of like in the same range. So I think they're both like the top corners in this class, but it's close.
Yeah. And you mentioned how important scheme fit is, because you look at the example that the last draft taught us, you know, Jeffrey Okuda goes to the Detroit Lions. The scheme doesn't fit him at all. And he looks terrible. And he was like a surefire thing. And then you have like Jalen Johnson, you know, who goes to the Chicago Bears, and it's a perfect scheme for him. And he thrives, and he looks like the better quarterback. Ultimately, I think Okuda is going to be the better quarterback. But like, yeah, scheme matters so much for these guys, and it is a difficult position to project. Who other than Jock, who you mentioned before, who has been like the most fun you've had evaluating a prospect this year? You know, if I'm watching like 20 day three prospects in a week, and I'm just getting tired of the Dane Brugler-ish grind, you know, who has the fun tape that I need to go watch for like a palate cleanser from really any round, dealer's choice?
Oh, man, this is a good question. So a couple guys come to mind. I'm going to say, so my first impression was, say, Elijah Moore from Mississippi, but I don't think his tape is, like what you said, like super, super fun. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go with Michael Carter from North Carolina, who I think he's twitchy. When I watch him play, like his movement, his explosion, his ability to change direction, and his highlight reel is pretty fun. Like he's just kind of, you know, he's all over the place. He's a little bit smaller. And I think that's going to be the concern, is like, is this guy big enough to be a foundational back? Probably not. You know, he did a rotation with Javonte Williams, who's also, by the way, like insanely fun to watch. He's like, you know, potentially maybe even more fun to watch in Carter, because he just breaks a ton of tackles, but different style, because Carter is very like explosive. He's got juice. Sort of like in the Nyheim Hines mold, where, you know, when you get him out in space, the guy is just making people look stupid. But how about this? This is totally me sitting on the fence, but go watch the North Carolina running backs. Because that team,
it's perfect.
Yeah, they are so fun to watch, man. That team can run the ball. Javonte Williams, I think, led the nation in broken tackles and broken tackles per attempt, for North Carolina. So he is just incredibly fun to watch, like gyroscope balance and breaks tackles and all that stuff. So those two guys, I'd say watch the North Carolina run game, because they're just a lot of fun.
Love it. Danny, thank you so much for joining us here on the SB Nation NFL show. I mentioned your draft card a couple of times. You can elaborate that on that if you want. Also plug where people can find you, your work, whatever you want to plug, man. Go for it.
Yeah, so go check out the Ringer's NFL Draft Guide. It's nfldraft.theringer.com. We're doing a big update next week. So on Monday of next week, the guide will be up to 50 players, and you got all the scouting reports, shades of. I do my best to make player comps, even those are pretty impossible to do without pissing people off. So go check that out. I do mock drafts every couple of weeks with those. And then you can check out the Ringer Fantasy Football Show, which I host along with a couple guys, and then we do that once a week. And then I'm also doing a show with Danny Heifetz from The Ringer on Fridays, which is called The Big Board Show, and that's on the Ringer NFL feed. And we're going to be doing that through the draft, where we talk everything about draft in the run up to the draft. So yeah, that'll be fun.
Give them an example of one of the comps that you make in your guide. What's like your favorite one? Because I love these.
So I'd say the one that I've gotten the most reaction from is I comped Zach Wilson to Baker Mayfield meets Henry Rowengardner, who, if you're not old like me, that is the kid in The Rookie of the Year, that movie like where he breaks his arm and all of a sudden he can throw 90 miles an hour or 100 miles an hour or whatever. Yeah. The reason I did that, Zach Wilson, it looks like he's about 16 years old, but he's got like this like elastic arm that can like make throws from every angle. So people seem to enjoy that one. But yeah, I wouldn't say that's like necessarily the norm. They're not all like goofy, you know, 90s movie, whatever.
Give me more of that. Give me all of that, Danny.
Yeah. Give them what the people want.
I really appreciate you stopping by, Danny. Thank you, man.
No problem.
Support for this show comes from Art Beats and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Colt Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art Beats and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual paths while also revealing their distinct roles within Art Beats and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu. Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.